Air Cascadia is off today. And then at 11 this morning, join us for Between the Covers. Today, host David Naiman speaks with Rob Spillman about his memoir, All Tomorrow's Parties. And then we'll wrap up the morning with a small piece from the series Artipus. It's a weekly radio journey through the world of contemporary art. So that's coming up at about 11:45. Up next, it is Flashpoints, today featuring interviews about a Guantanamo prisoner who was finally given a limited chance to plead his case, and teachers in Chiapas, Mexico, who are on strike, plus the weekly election fraud bulletin with Greg Palast. That is all coming up this morning here on KBOO. Stick around.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Rogue Farm Corp's Happy Hour Open House Friday, June 17th at 6 p.m. at Hatch Innovations in Portland. Rogue Farms Corps exists to train the next generations of farmers and ranchers through hands-on educational programs. The open house will provide information about farmer training programs, have food, drink, and DJs Tobias and Dez. Again, that's the Rogue Farm Corp's Happy Hour Open House Friday, June 17th at 6 p.m. at Hatch Innovations, 2420 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Flashpoints. After 9 years, a little-known Guantanamo prisoner is finally given a limited chance to plead his case. Also, teachers on strike in Chiapas will feature a live report from the ground there. Protesters in front of City Hall in San Francisco speaking out about the disregarding of non-party preference votes. No party preference votes across the state. We'll feature our weekly election fraud bulletin. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. Well, a little-known Afghan prisoner is began to plead his case to Guantanamo Bay's version of a parole board after 9 years imprisonment without legal representation. Harun al-Afghani, who has never been charged, received a trial or had an attorney since arriving at Guantanamo in 2007. He was originally passed to the U.S. military by local Afghan forces, according to a report, I guess, from Al Jazeera. His wife and young daughter now live in a refugee camp, and not much more is known about him. Joining us to talk as much as she can about this is Shelby Sullivan Bennis. She was with Harun al-Afghani today, representing him. We are delighted to have you with us, Shelby Sullivan Bennis. Thanks for joining us. And, well, why don't you just begin a little bit by giving us as much background, telling us as much as you can possibly tell us under, I know, strict national security restrictions. Tell us something about who this man is and how he was captured.
Hi, thank you for having me. Harun's story is quite the untold mystery, and we're hoping that with this hearing it will become more public. Some of the documents will be published and we'll be able to know a bit more about him. Unfortunately, because of America's secrecy laws regarding Guantanamo, I'm only able to say what is already made public, which is predominantly from the Al Jazeera article, with regard to how he was captured and who he is. I can say that he is a delightful young man who is funny and sweet and kind, and I was very grateful to have the opportunity to be the person standing beside him when he had no one else.
And you just met him, right?
I did. I met him last week.
Last week, and he's been rotting at Guantanamo. Well, he's been pretty busy, I understand, but he has been there 9 years without any hearing representation whatsoever.
Exactly. Yeah, it sounds like quite the odd, tragic story, and it really is. He's, as far as I understand it, the only prisoner at Guantanamo who did not have counsel over the course of all of those years. I know personally from having spoken to other attorneys that he did reach out for support, but because of capacity issues, none were able to provide that support. So I was glad to be there when he needed someone for his hearing.
So and it took him 9 years to get representation.
Yeah, you know, what I really think did the trick was that there was the imminence of this hearing, and we all know how important it is. So, you know, when people receive letters from detainees, which actually come quite often asking for support for their case, many detainees have multiple attorneys. Sometimes those are pushed to the side, but when something as important as this, and we know the administration is intent on releasing as many men as possible, that it's very important to all of us that they have the representation required. So I think that was the impetus.
But what took so long? He just couldn't get representation?
Yeah, I know for a fact that he had reached out to multiple attorneys and asked for support, but a lot of the attorneys that are quite well known down here have multiple cases and are quite overloaded themselves. I think he just sort of fell through the cracks, as unfortunate as that sounds.
And again, how was he captured?
From what we understand from public documents, he was handed over by Afghan forces, and he was allegedly found with six others who had affiliations with organizations with whom the U.S. government was displeased, to say the least.
What was his treatment like at Guantanamo?
That is something I can't speak to, but I hope to be able to within the next couple of weeks. We at Reprieve are working in different mechanisms to get some of our notes cleared and made public. But I'll tell you, it's quite the battle. So hopefully we'll have that information soon.
So he hasn't been able to speak to you about his treatment, or you can't talk publicly based on secrecy law?
The latter.
The latter. So you know how he was treated, but you can't talk to us about it yet.
Exactly.
Can you say if it was good or bad?
I can't. I'll tell you one thing. From my understanding, no one who has lived the life of these men who have been held captive here for all these years would ever describe their treatment as good.
Was he ever fasting or a hunger striker or force fed? Or you can't say?
Yeah, that's another thing I can't say.
And these are all based on secrecy laws.
Right, secrecy laws that apply strictly to those in Guantanamo and not to other detainees around the United States. And it's certainly not something that we as Americans who enter courtrooms for traffic tickets and other affiliated things are accustomed to. But it's quite a different type of justice here at Guantanamo, and I am unable to say anything of substance until specific censors have cleared all of my notes. And
the censors? So how does that work? You have to give over all your notes and they search them for possible national security breaches?
Yeah, what they do, I think they would term it classification review. So they essentially get to read everything that my client and I talk about privately, and they sift through it and they decide what parts of it are secret and which parts of it that they can declassify, because everything that a Guantanamo detainee says, no matter how trivial, is presumptively secret.
Was he able to communicate with his family on some kind of regular basis?
From what I understand, from what his family has told various news outlets, they are able to communicate with him, but they had quite some time even figuring out where he was to begin with. So
he was just snatched, and for years they didn't know where he was?
Yeah, that is also my understanding from the Al Jazeera article and a few others who've spoken to his family members. His family, from what I understand from public source information, lives in a refugee camp in Pakistan, and I think resources are limited, and of course when the U.S. government kidnaps you, they don't send a letter to your family telling you that they've done that.
So do you know if he was interrogated, waterboarded, anything like that? Do you know?
I can't say any of that.
But you know, but you can't say, right?
Right.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Sorry, I was just going to say, what I can say is that I know that he's not mentioned in the executive summary of the torture report that came out in 2014. But that does not mean, from everything that I know, that that a man was not tortured. That just means that they didn't make it into the summary.
By the way, when you said hello, were you able to shake hands and touch him?
Was I able to what?
Were you able to shake hands and say hello?
Oh, yes. Yes, I can tell you all physical observations. Yes, he's, in my opinion, he's quite open. And we shook hands. He was gregarious and really a pleasure to just be around for the several hours over the last week that I have spent with him.
And he did not waste a lot of time. He apparently he has educated himself. He speaks five languages now.
Right. That's true.
And he's got several degrees.
From what I understand, he has a 4-year economics degree. The government has somehow managed to typo that in my public statement. It's a 2-year degree, but he's quite educated. And that comes across in all conversation. It comes across in his demeanor, in the comments that he makes. He speaks more languages than I do by far. He's an impressive man, and it's unfortunate that he hasn't had the proper representation that he needed. And I think that if he had, he would have been out of here much sooner.
Would you tell us a little bit more about your impressions, having met him recently, and sort of things that come to mind as you think about this what's happened in the last couple of days and the hearing today?
Sure, yeah. What I can tell you from all these classified meetings are my part in them. The words that I say are not presumptively secret. So I can tell you that I did discuss what has happened in Orlando with Haroon. I can tell you that he looked quite sympathetic. I shared with him that many of my very closest friends are gay and could very well have been there that night. And sometimes, you know, when I speak to clients, they have one reaction, maybe slight discomfort, depending on who they are, how comfortable they are with me. That Haroon is quite open and caring, and it sort of, he wears his heart on his sleeve as far as as my opinion goes. I'm sorry, I'm limited in what I am able to tell you, but...
He has a great desire to return to his family. That's the center of his life and the center of his focus in terms of returning home, right?
It is, absolutely.
How can you explain that to us? What gave you that sense that this was somebody who was sincere and wanted to return to being a loving father?
Yeah. So again, I'm limited in what I am able to say, but I know that that he, from what I understand and from as my statement reads, he feels extremely guilty for having left his family, even though it's clearly not his doing that he left. That they are struggling to survive without his financial, emotional, and other support. And I think that is his main and only desire. And as many of the brothers are seeing right now, people are actually getting out of Guantanamo when they never thought that they would. So the tides are changing, and people are sort of acknowledging that and feeling quite hopeful for once in the last 14 years for Haroon 9. And I think that optimism is really spreading and sort of carrying a wave of folks being excited, frankly, about the prospect of returning home to their families after all these years.
What can you say? How can you describe to us, does he understand why he was captured and imprisoned? Does he understand that?
It's hard to really say that any of us understand that. I think the U.S. government has a different take on how they should handle these matters than others. I can tell you that from everyone that I've spoken to, all of my clients, none of them think that the way to handle a national security investigation is to illegally kidnap, render, and torture a person and bring them to their country, keep them captive for 14 years without charge or trial.
Is that what happened to him?
Yeah, it is our professional opinion that everyone who was brought to Guantanamo was illegally captured, rendered, tortured and brought here without due process, yes.
So it might be safe to assume that he was brutalized and tortured, although you can't say that he was, based on, even if you know that from talking with him.
Yes.
Any scars on his body? Or you can't talk
Sorry?
About that. And, you know, if someone was tortured or beaten, or, you know, they would have some scars, but I guess you couldn't, if he did, you couldn't talk about that.
I can't actually speak to his physical appearance, but I have many clients who have been tortured who were named in the torture report who don't have visible scars from my perspective, sitting across the table from them. You know, it's been 9 years. None of them look very well. It's quite a dreary place to be stuck without access to anything or anyone. But no, I did not see any scars.
And why did it take so long to find out about this guy? 9 years.
I know. To be honest, I think he really managed to slip through the cracks of busy schedules and popular attorneys. And by popular, I mean that term respectfully. Some of the most popular attorneys here are popular because they are the best to their clients. They do the best for them, and their clients understand that. So I think what happens when people aren't already aligned with someone. So Haroon arrived, as we know, late in the game in 2007. Everyone already had an attorney. The rush for attorneys to come down to Guantanamo and pick up a brand new case had passed several years ago. So he arrived, and this thing, the ball was already rolling, essentially. So for attorneys to be approached by Haroon for support, they were sort of, in many cases, I'm sure, that the circumstances were such that they already had multiple clients, and they had had them for a few years, and their hands were full. So I think because he got here late, because the attorneys whose names I'm sure were going around the camps at that time were quite overloaded with work, that he sort of just got pushed to the wayside. And it wasn't until a very important opportunity in his case, this hearing, came up, that it really got anyone's attention.
And just back to the hearing today, did he speak in the